This is an incredible privilege. Wonder Boom, the band, has been playing, and jump in here anytime, Sito, since 1996, which pegs the interview today as you guys being 28 years old strong. You've headlined pretty much every major festival in South Africa. You've won all sorts of South African music awards, been nominated, etc. You've also played the global battle of the bands. You've played with massive international acts, helping them before they get on stage. And the list just goes on and on and on. Sito from Wonder Boom, what a privilege to have you on the show today, my friend. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Ian. What a great introduction. And it's great to be speaking to you again after so many years.
Yeah, I think the last time we spoke properly was when I was on 5FM back in South Africa years ago. And the landscape since we last chatted has changed considerably. I'd like to start now in the immediate kind of time that we're speaking now about what you're up to. And then I'm going to take it back a little bit just to give some context to people who actually don't know your story. You've got this new album, Hard Mode, which is out. I believe it's like a month old today. And I was I was taking a gander through some YouTube videos. First of all, I love the deadly video on the basketball court. That's fantastic. And then I was listening with DJ ears, and I was going, hang on a minute here. You've changed style in this particular song, which is kind of a perfect way to say that Wonder Boom cannot be pinned down to one particular style, can you? Tell us about Deadly. Tell us about this Hard Mode album. What's going on?
Well, I don't know. I think if you've known us really deeply, you would maybe agree that although we've always been a rock band, we've never really married to any kind of specific subgenre of rock. And if you listen to our albums all the way from the beginning, each song is different to the other. So we've still maintained that eclectic kind of approach to just because of the way that we are as individuals. You know, we've always been sort of very diverse in our taste of music and influences and, you know, the kind of music that we listen to. I think when you heard Deadly, and if you haven't heard from us for a while, it must have been a shock. But it's been a gradual journey. You know, it's like I think if you listen to our previous albums, you'll see that there's diversity there.
Exactly, you know? which makes for very interesting listening, because there's never a moment where you go, yeah, this piece of chewing gum's tasting a bit stale now, I'll change to another artist. You've got a repertoire that keeps it interesting, which is, I suppose, when on stage, fantastic for an audience, because you're on your toes the whole time listening to different styles of rock as you go through your repertoire, right?
Absolutely, and I think a big part of it is, you know, we're just keeping it interesting for ourselves more than anything else. And because life isn't black and white, you know, it just allows for us to take the audience through a bit of a journey and a personal journey and a, you know, sort of a voyeur's journey of what's been happening in our world, the world of Wonder Boom anyway.
Sito, you've got an incredibly, when I say incredible, I really mean incredible background. I didn't know this until I started to do some homework. You were born in the States. What? And then you moved here, and people consider you to be a homegrown South African. You're part of the fabric of music society in this country, yet your influences range from gospel music right the way through to rock. What the heck, dude?
Yeah, it's a long story. It's a long story, but I came here as a teenager, did high school, and then the music bug kind of bit me and sort of evolved from there. But yeah, I was born in LA. I was raised in Queens, in New York City, and all of my family are in the States. And I visit every now and then. But I'm really South African, as you say. I've become part of the the scene here, so to speak. So, yeah.
Did that tapestry of different influences kind of frustrate you initially that you had to put yourself in a rock box? Or did you choose that as a style of music because that's what was in your heart?
Yeah, I think rock is what got me into becoming a musician. I'd been raised listening to classical and gospel. Both my parents are ministers and they're also musically talented. So I think the natural sort of music talent was in the blood. But what made me kind of really become a rock musician was checking out U2's Joshua Tree album.
Right.
And then the following album, which is Rattle and Hum, where they toured the Joshua Tree and, you know, all of, you know, the way Bono performed and the band performed and the songs, and it just really spoke to me. They just turned out to be the sort of secular window drug band to, you know, pop music and rock music. And I fell hard. Started learning bass, started off on bass guitar. At the age of 17, I was playing for a soul band called Heart and Soul. We did like all these old school R&B covers, like Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and Booker T and the MGs. And that sort of introduced me to the live circuits of Johannesburg playing live. And then from there, it just evolved. But rock has always been the core of my interest, I suppose the formative years. But now I listen to all kinds of music, from world, you know, organic ambient to electronic techno and all of that. So it's quite wide, my styles.
You can hear that in your new album. You can hear that for sure. You've definitely threaded some of those different genres in there. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, definitely. Undeniably. Thank you.
I hope you take it as a compliment because it is. I guess what some would call growth, you know, as a musician, certainly from someone who has followed your career and listened to it, it seems to be a natural progression into something rather wonderful. The music industry's changed, though. I mean, from when I first heard of you back in the 90s to now, the landscape has changed completely. How's that been dealt with from a Vonnegut Boom perspective? You guys have managed to stay together for 28 years. There must have been some trying times where you were like, nah, here's the towel, I'm chucking it in. Have you had those moments?
Yeah, look, there's been a couple of those moments. I think more for me, because I'm so dramatic and I can be impulsive sometimes. But I think the only reason why we're still together and still rocking is because we just love making music together. We love playing live together and we're friends more than anything else. We call ourselves brothers, you know? So, I think we are in Vonnegut still rocking for the right reasons.
Right.
We, haven't been put off by, you know, lack of popularity or irrelevance, because that the industry can be quite sort of cutthroat in that regard, you know. And rock has popped in and out of fashion so many times over our lifespan. If we were ever going to be sort of sensitive in that regard, we would have broken up the band ages ago. But we're in it because we love each other so much and we love creating music together, and our fans have kept us going. So I think that, you know, as long as there's people listening to our music and coming to our shows, it just keeps us motivated to just keep creating more and more, you know.
You are, as you say, close to your fellow bandmates, friendship, I guess, being the number one word. That must have hit very hard with the passing of Garth McLeod, the drummer of Vonnegut. He was a friend of mine as well. And I'm interested to know, and I'm sorry to bring it up if it causes a bit of pain again, but I mean, Garth was part of the fabric of Vonnegut. He passed in 2013. Did that set you guys back on your path?
Look, the impact that Garth had on the band, he joined us in 2009. So he was with us for 4 years while we were trucking, and we had just started to find our real groove with him. We had recorded an album with him, which we were so blessed to do. And it was almost like we had a sort of new lease on our creative life. And as that momentum started to build, because, you know, it's not something that you can easily shortcut, you know, like the chemistry within a band is so important to our performance, to our livelihood, that that's not something that you can shortcut and just put a session guy in, you know, and you'll carry on regardless. Yes, the songs are there and yes, the history is there, but there's something quite magic that happens when you take in somebody new and they have to like find their way in, find the groove in, and then just that connection and that chemistry with Wade on bass and Martin on guitar, like you become like an organism, like a consolidated organism of the four parts, you know? Mm. And so, but when Garth had that accident, definitely knocked the wind out of our sails. We had to regroup and decide what we're going to do. And we kind of eased into it. Jono, who plays drum for us now, he's now been with us for 11 years. Mm. When he joined the band, he had obviously big shoes to fill, but he very quickly just fit right in. And there's something quite magic that we have with Jono that we didn't have with the other drummers either, in that he seems to be on a wavelength when it comes to performance, the way we play, the dynamic, the energy, all of that. Amazing. So yeah, Jono has become quite an amazing member of the band, and we're very happy with him. And just like no member is dispensable. I can easily say that for the drums. You know, John has done a great job. Yeah. You must check us out live.
Yeah. Days. Well, listen, we'll get to that in a second, because I'll give the dates of when you're performing. I do want to touch on the industry for a second. I alluded to it earlier on.
Sure.
But I mean, back in the late 90s, there was very much an album culture. Oh, Vonnegut have a new album. And then the era of fast consumerism of TikTok clips, you know, if you're not in it by 5 seconds through the clip, you're out, appears. And that really calls for new singles all the time, which can be, I guess, incredibly tiring for an artist, for a band, and also changes the way that you release music. Has that affected you guys substantially?
Well, look, I think in many ways the industry started off that way with singles. And even in our days of when we were signed to Gresham, David Gresham Records, he was still thinking along those lines, you know, like release a single and see if people like it. And if they don't like it, then, you know, then you try something else. And, you know, which was kind of, for us, it was quite sterile and I suppose impersonal, you know, that way.
For sure.
And I'm still a huge fan of albums. I'm still old school that way. But we ended up having to play that game anyway, and it's fine. Like hard mode now, it's the culmination of a few singles that we've released already, and then a whole bunch of new material, and they all seem to have miraculously complemented each other so beautifully. I'm still a fan of albums. I know that we adapt as much as we can with the times of innovation and the technology and how people are consuming music. But I'm still a fan of the song. I'm still a fan of the album as far as context is concerned, because you're telling a story, you know? And so hard mode, I feel is like it's like a movie capturing an era of Vonnegut between 2019 and now, when we also embarked on doing these recordings with Matthew Fink as a producer. So there is definitely a flavor on it. There's a stamp on it. Amazing. That has a cohesive kind of sound throughout. So big fan of the album.
Did you choose to re-sign? I heard somewhere that there was a Just Music was involved in the mix at some point. Are you still signed to them, or are you doing your own thing independently now?
No. So we went from Gallo and Sheer Music and we went with just music. Yeah, just so we could work with Maffey, really. Mm. He's an in-house producer, phenomenal musician, phenomenal genius in production, in the studio. He's just very creative, and he's like one of us in many ways. Wow. That's kind of like been the biggest selling point for us, is that I've always wanted to work with him, and he has similar taste in music as us. He has a similar background to us. It's almost like we're on the same kind of team, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was, yes, we did sign to Just Music, and this album is released through them.
Hard question then. Were there times when you were with your previous label, and I'm not going to throw anyone under the bus here, and I don't expect you to either, but
sure.
Where you didn't have total creative freedom, where you were kind of pushed in a direction that you didn't want to go?
I would say in the beginning of the Vonnegut journey, the last couple of albums, we definitely had, you know, as we grew and we've grown as musicians and producers ourselves, we've become more hands on in that. But in the beginning, because we were quite sort of naive and yes. still learning,
yeah.
we kind of entrusted the producer at the time or those at the label to, you know, to make decisions. And, you know, I would go in and do my vocals and get kicked out, and, you know, and they would put it all together and we'd have our feedback, but, you know, there wasn't much we could give because, you know, back then in those days,
in the day,
working on analog, analog to tape, you know, studio time was so expensive and precious, and everything just took forever to get, you know, done. Mm. Nowadays it's, you know, you could put out a song in a day, you know? Mm. So yeah, maybe back in the day, but nowadays, especially the later years, we've had lots of creative freedom, and it's been to our advantage, but also to our detriment. It's nice having a producer on board, because we've been doing self-producing as well with previous albums, and it's great for certain things, but not great for the having that soundboard, that, you know, that objective kind of feedback that you need, or influence on our production and things like that.
And I can imagine, as a creative human being, it's sometimes tough to hear that feedback, but if you have it on tap all the time, it must be brilliant to have somebody to go, I don't think that's right, how about this, giving you thoughts here. That must be a fantastic place to be in, if you're in that environment where people are giving you instant feedback, and no wonder you want to work with somebody who you trust and love.
No, totally. And look, Martin and I have been writing songs. He's the guitarist. He and I have been writing songs for over 30 years together. And there's an honest relationship that happens there. And it's beautiful now, but when you're young and you're full of energy and ego and all sorts of stuff, you know, you can have a couple of clashes, but, luckily, our love and our relationship and our honesty with each other has gotten us through that. And we've developed a very cool relationship. I mean, he's the longest relationship I've been involved with. calling my work wife.
Yeah.
So a lot of that work sort of gets done when we get together to write the songs before we present them to the band, to workshop, and we go into studio. And then that sort of carries on. Like, we, you know, there's musical ideas or creative ideas that I would, you know, see through to the recording sessions. And when it gets down to the mixes, you know, the honesty will be like, listen, Cedar, I think maybe we need to cut that off or cut that out just to clean it up a bit, because it's just too much stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've developed enough maturity over the years to say, you know what, you're right, let's try it out. If it sounds cool without it, then let's just kick it out.
Amazing.
And that's what happens in the studio, and that's what happens with these long relationships. You develop a trust, and sometimes you have to just say, you know what, you're right.
Cedar, just trawling through the huge mountain of stuff you've done, there are many feathers to your bow, my friend. you're not only just Vonerboom, you're other stuff too. I was fascinated to hear that you've done solo projects. I was fascinated to know that you're on stage a lot doing other performance. Just tell us a little bit about that in the world of Sito outside of Vonerboom.
Look, I've had the privilege of doing, like, for my day job, I'd say with quotation marks, I've had the privilege of working with somebody that I met in musical theater, who brought me in to do music direction at corporate events. So I've been doing corporate events, doing music direction for corporate events for about 11 years now.
Wow.
And I've had the privilege of working with, like, all kinds of artists and producers, and also just keeping in touch with what's happening in the music scene, especially locally. So that's been quite cool. But to keep my creative spirit balanced, I've had a couple of projects, musical projects that I've spawned on. Many years ago, 20 years ago, I started a project called Absinthe with the lead singer of Sugar Drive, Paul Flynn, where we do all covers, but it's like unplugged. And it's both of our voices, and we harmonize, and it's been quite a cool, I call it my self-indulgent project, because it's really just, you know, it's really like our taste in music and the way we approach them. And every now and then we get called up to do we opened for A-ha when they came out here in 2020. We opened for Deacon Blue not so long ago, which is quite cool. But the idea was with that was just to do sort of nice, quiet, like, bistro gigs, or, like, you know, middle of the week gigs at some smoky bar, and you know, just to keep the juices flowing, you know. Then I also launched a Spanish project called El Cantante. My home language is Spanish because my mother's Puerto Rican. And all my siblings from my mother's side are all born in Puerto Rico. So I grew up listening to a lot of that music, and my mom playing and singing guitar. And I developed a style from her way of guitar picking, you know. Wow. So I've got a project called El Cantante. Martin from Vonerboom is on guitar on that, which is quite cool, as a lead guitarist. And Rian van Rensburg, who's in Boo and many other projects, he's on percussion. And then more recently, I've started a project called Blood Honey. And we do all the sort of dark electronic, semi-electronic. It's sort of gothic. It's like my gothic passion project.
Love it.
It's really just addressing my sort of darker side, and we've had lots of fun with that as well. Let's check it out. Blood Honey, spelled BLVD, like Boulevard, but we turn the V into a U, kind of Roman numeral vibe, and then Honey, HVNNY.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll check it. I am definitely going to check it out.
I also did some musical theater. Yeah, back in 2006, I did Jesus Christ Superstar. I landed the lead role as Jesus, which is quite cool. And it opened up a whole new world to me as well, getting to do some musical theater. I did Chess the Musical, and we revisited JC Superstar again in 2011. So that's been quite cool for me as well.
You are a talented human being, sir. It's very nice to hear somebody who's actually doing what they truly love to do every single day. That's amazing. It's a very big
privilege. Yeah, thank you. It is indeed. It is indeed. And I'm very humbled by that.
Two final questions, and then I'll let you go. The first is probably a horrible question that you don't like to get asked, is tell us about your stage show. What can people expect? But genuinely, tell us, what can people expect to see on stage in 2024 with Vonerboom?
Well, we are touring our new album, so there's a lot of new material in our sets. We are busy reworking a lot of our older hits so that we could still play them in our sets. Because you know what happens is you every time you release an album, you kind of like, you're adding more songs to the repertoire. And because our time is limited on stage, you can't play everything.
Yep.
So So with regards to seeing us nowadays, there's going to be a whole lot of new material. But we still have the hits. Hopefully we'll play your favorite song. But if you haven't seen Vonerboom yet, it's like watching a, I suppose, it's like watching a creature just get down and boogie on stage as one sort of cohesive unit. And hopefully it's sort of contagious, the energy that you get off on stage.
I was literally going to use the word cohesive a few seconds ago, kind of going, you're so together. Oh. It's wonderful. Wonderful.
Sorry.
No, it's perfect. You're on my page. The Camp Rock Festival happens at Monte Cristo at the resort. It's right by the river from the 10th till the 12th of May. It's 30 kilometers out of Windhoek. You're going to be joined alongside with Jack Parrow. Arno and the Nude Girls will be there. Boo's going to be there. So like your family is going to be there, basically. And then there's just a wonderful litany of beautiful artists going to be spending some time that weekend. Tickets are available. You can get them. All you need to do is point your browser to nova.com.na. 750 Rand will get you a weekend pass. You can upgrade to 2,200 Namibian dollars for the glamping kit if you want to go and glamp for the weekend. And if you do have kids under 16, they will get in for free. Sito, I am so absolutely blessed.
You.
I'm so blessed to be able to say that we've had a chat. Thank you for sharing your time and your stories.
Yeah, thank you. It's been so cool chatting to you as well, Ian. It's brought back lots of memories of the good old days. Mm-hmm. I must just say, we were at Camp Rock last year, and I don't know if many, well, I suppose people that haven't been to Camp Rock yet, I was really blown away, obviously, by the beautiful grounds at Monte Cristo, but the production that they put on, it really is like a world-class production, stage and lighting and all of that. It's really, really, really beautiful. I'm very excited, actually. Can't wait to play there.
Amazing. Sito, thanks for your time, mate. I really value it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you. All the best, Ian.
You too. Take care, mate. Bye-bye.
Thank you, brother.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.